Welcome to the Engage Podcast from Blackbaud, the podcast for people dedicated to purpose-driven work. From nonprofit fundraising and finance to grant-making, education, and corporate social responsibility, we're talking with sector experts and thought leaders about the best practices and latest trends that will help you grow your impact.
Hello, everyone. I'm Stephanie Walker, the Vice President of Talent Acquisition and Inclusion at Blackbaud. I'm so excited today to be joined by Patty McElreevy to tell us great things about the Center for Disaster Philanthropy. Patty, tell me about yourself and tell me more about what you do.
Yeah, Stephanie, thanks for having me here. And so what do? I lead the team at the Center for Disaster Philanthropy. And what does that mean? Well, we mobilize philanthropy towards equitable recovery after disaster and really looking at how do we help philanthropy understand why equitable recovery is so important after disaster, and helping them like have conduits for their funding so that, you know, kind of moving that philanthropic capital into these areas, and also just kind of trying to create communities of practice within philanthropy. So looking at how we can just be together for communities when they're kind of at their lowest point.
What is the state of disaster philanthropy today? Give me some more information, whether it's trends or changes. The world is changing every day. What are some of the things that you've seen and challenges you face?
Well, I mean, the state of disaster philanthropy is there's enough money, but there's not enough funding going into disasters, right? This is, you know, we know this. And so how do we get more funding into communities? I think philanthropy is generous. We see that constantly. Every report that comes out of Indiana University or others that are doing studies, Americans are incredibly generous people. So when we talk about disaster philanthropy, it's really that subset of how we help after disaster. And one of the things CDP tries to do is to get people to look at that long arc of recovery. So right after an event, you will often see a lot of giving. What we are trying to do is get people to recognize that by giving to recovery, by giving to preparedness, by anticipatory action, we can actually make those disasters harm communities less and also help their recovery go faster. So the state of disaster philanthropy is that long-term giving is growing, but it's not where we need it to be, where we would like it to be. People are still taking too long to recover after disaster.
It's very hard. One of the things that I've always wondered is what constitutes a disaster relative to a humanitarian crisis? Could you tell me about the differences between those two things?
Yeah, well, realistically, they are the same in the purest form of the definition. A disaster is a hazard meaning a vulnerability. What occurs in a humanitarian crisis is the layering of those hazards, the layering of those vulnerabilities. But to be, you know, more clear in terms of the hazard meeting the vulnerability, it's you know, you have a hurricane or an earthquake meeting an infrastructure that can't support it, or a community that isn't capable to economically recover from the damage that's occurred, or pre-existing inequities, whatever it may be. That disaster, that hazard, is that event meeting that vulnerability. That's when the disaster is created. It's why you see different communities able to recover differently, right? The same factors of a hurricane could hit two different communities side by side, but one may be better able to resist or mitigate the harm that is being caused because of the vulnerability they may or may not have to that hazard. So that's why we use that framing. A complex humanitarian emergency, the challenges within that is it involves that multiple compounding drivers, some of which continually change, right? So if you have a natural hazard, you know, maybe it comes and it goes. It may be, you know, time for the water to dissipate or the fire to be put out, but there's almost like an end date to it. What becomes protracted is the recovery. In a complex humanitarian emergency, the hazard is protracted. Right? You continue to have displacement, you continue to have conflict, you continue to have food insecurity, whatever it is that's layering that crisis for you just continues to occur or shift. And that's why they become challenges, different vulnerabilities within the community. And that's why we call it a complex humanitarian emergency.
So interesting and super helpful to me. So you have a great depth of experience in this space. And when you're thinking about the ecosystem of this, not the first responders, but the ecosystem of how we're all working, you know, to make an impact. What would your magic wand do? What are the things that you would cast a spell over?
Well, if I had a magic wand, there's so many. I mean, I guess
where do I start?
Yeah, where would you start? The Bijamak one would be that we didn't have the vulnerabilities that were, you know, but that's a different one. Yeah, so let's talk about what may be realistic magical wand desires. So what is the timing and distribution of disaster giving, right? So we really look at a surge in funding, a surge in donations in those first weeks. People give due to scale, they give due to proximity, they give due to the media, right? So that first, you know, we've had a muscle memory for generations where it's like, this has happened, I'm going to help and I'm going to send in my funds. And so that's followed by a very steep drop off in support. So that money is often tied to response and then the funding dries up, yet the community is still there trapped in recovery. And so we're really having a bit more of a balance into the recognition of that giving is needed for years. That recovery takes years. And so having that initial give would be that the surge to be more aligned to the actual needs of the community and looking at that. So that'd be my first wish, is really that recognition of that long arc of recovery. My second wish would be, I'm sorry, I'm going to have a bunch of wands here. I'm taking advantage of it. You know, I'd rebalance that with a more consistent long-term funding as well. So we have, you know, one is that the funding comes in and has, you know, a recovery mindset, community-led, but also that we're looking long-term, we're looking flexible. Because we know that what people need varies. And even we saw this during COVID, what I needed versus what my neighbor needed versus what the neighbor across the street needed. So all of us in a similar type environment all needed different things to recover. And yet we have this, you know, again, expectation that in a crisis far away from us, a hazard far away from us, everyone needs the same thing. So we need to move away from that. We need to get better about allowing flexibility, community-led solutions. And so that would be my magic wand, really just how we give, what we think about how we give, and the amount of kind of confidence we give to the people on the ground in through trusting them to know the best solutions.
When you think about those wands, and you know, you've talked a lot about how both immediate response and long-term giving is really critical to the sustained support of that. Have you been impacted by changes in the past year? Are there changes or challenges that have changed for you more recently than the long-term?
In terms of the needs on the ground? Is that
the needs on the ground or the world, you know, that you've had a lot of disasters. Is there anything that just causes you pause as you've taken and reflect on the last year of being in
the— Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, two things really come to mind. One is the government withdrawal from international assistance and also the uncertainty over domestic assistance, but not just our government. A lot of governments are currently withdrawing from that space. And, you know, what we talk about when we talk about equitable recovery at CDP, what we're really talking about is leaving no one behind. If there's not a predictable first responder in terms of the funding from the government, that is a challenge to the nonprofits who are trying desperately to support communities. They lose their capacity, there's a brain drain. So there's this, and also communities are left in a bit of uncertainty. So, you know, especially domestically, but also internationally, we've seen this, you know, real lack of clarity of how, what would happen. That's been one big issue for us. And then you highlighted the disasters. I mean, we've had a lot of disasters. You know, in some ways, the blessing in that is none of them have been major, large scale in the last year, other than the conflict currently unfolding in the Middle East. We haven't seen as many large scale, like natural climate hazards as we have in other years. Yet that also means, I remember I said about how people give, proximity, scale, and media. So if you're not having those two of those drivers, scale and media, you're not having a lot of funding going into those disasters, but that doesn't change the fact that those communities are affected. That's a challenge for CDP, is looking at how we get donors to give, even when it's not a known crisis or it's not on the front pages of the news. How do we continue to draw the attention to those areas and say, hey, these communities still need your help? And some of them may actually need it even more than some of the large scale areas, because there's so little attention and it's existential for that community. And so we look at working in different ways with donors to make sure that they're aware of those different crises, those different disasters, and how to help.
The inclusion, as you just talk about it from an equity and no one left behind perspective, is so impactful. I think that's just a really big thought as to how you approach your work. It's awesome. If you had to share with foundations or advise foundations that don't have a system in place to respond to a crisis, what guidance would you give? How would you tell them to progress forward?
Well, most likely they have a strategy, they just don't necessarily recognize it. And so in some ways it's about defining that. So I would say the guiding star is really simple in terms of your disaster giving is be value driven and be need driven. What are your values as an organization? What are the things you care about deeply? And then where are those needs and you know, where do they align and how can you help? So part of the reason we highlight that is again, we are often moment driven, right? That event happened and then it's all hands on deck, everybody to this crisis. But that, a lot of donors will say, well, hold on, there's too many choices. It's unclear. Where should I help? How should I help? And you get almost an analysis paralysis, right? Like, I'm not sure how to support. I'm not sure how to help here. And that's why I'll say, step back. It's okay not to help everywhere. It's okay to say, our values are here. This is what aligns with our values. This is where we see the need. This is where we see we can make a difference. And to support in those places and to be clear about that with yourself and with your organization. And so I don't think it's about having to find that multiple page strategy that sits on a desk somewhere that nobody remembers exists. It sometimes can be something as simple as we have a checklist of a few things and has it met those checklists? And then we give. And what does that look like? I think, and CDP can help organizations with that brainstorming. But as I said, it can be quite simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. For an organization, it doesn't need to be that much more complicated than your own personal giving, right? It's really like, where am I connected? Where am I feeling, you know, these funds can make a difference and these organizations are organizations I support and I believe in. And then within that is also just being careful not to center yourself within that need, within that solution. Let the community define the priorities. Let the community, you know, be flexible enough that your money can support multi-year equitable recovery if that's what the community is seeking, right? So immediate relief isn't a bad thing to support. Of course it isn't. It is required and needed. But also recognize that by the time your support comes in, if you've locked it into that, it may be more than is needed for that moment in that situation. So how do you allow the organization you trust and you believe in the community you want to help, how do you allow them to have the agency and the dignity to move forward with the solution that they want to have for themselves? Because those of us from afar, despite our levels of expertise, Stephanie, we don't always know. We sometimes rarely know what is the most important thing for that community for their recovery. And so to allow ourselves to learn each time anew, what may be the priority? What is the thing that's holding them back from recovery and allowing the funding to go towards them?
That's fantastic advice. So as we think about our conversation today, what are the three things that you would like our audience to take away from this? What do you want them to think about when they're in this space and giving?
I mean, first, I think really just remember that disasters are not the hazard, right? That it's the hazard of an earthquake, the hazard of a hurricane. That's not the disaster itself. If there was a hurricane, I mean, I live in Florida. So if there's a hurricane off in the Atlantic and it doesn't hit any land, we rarely remember its name, much less the date it's arriving, right? But if it hits land, it's when it hits that vulnerability, that's when we start worrying about it. When it looks like it's going to hit us, that's when we start worrying about it. So remembering that, because that helps us with the outcome. That helps us with the framing of why was I vulnerable? And that vulnerability is what my recovery needs, right? To address that vulnerability. So it really helps us look at that. It also helps us look at, in our current programming, what can I do to mitigate vulnerabilities, to decrease risk of hazards, so that I can actually even better ensure this community isn't even affected. So that's number one, is remembering that the event itself is not the disaster. The event is the hazard. The second thing is that the people closest to the problem are closest to the solution, right? And academically, we all know this, but we often get confused in thinking, well, I have the funding, I have the wherewithal to support, and so let me come in and try and also help you with the solution. Help is fine, partnership is fine, but telling people the solution. But you know, don't replace local leadership, don't replace their voice. Take the moment to listen. Trust and resource the organizations. Do that beforehand. If you know there's certain areas, like I said, you know, we were talking about before that North Star, if you've already identified certain organizations or certain geographies that you're going to help in, do that work beforehand. Know who you're going to support. And then early on in that disaster, you can then pull a plug and be like, hey, guys, I'm behind you here. We're going to help. We're going to support. And this is what it looks like. So really keeping that in mind, looking at what pre-work can you do to make that decision on the day that much easier. And third is just timeline. Remember that recovery takes years, not weeks. And so the surge of funding those immediate days, while welcome and important, is not sufficient. It does not go far enough. And so, you know, looking at those long-term needs of the community, really looking at how you can support that through your funding and how do you, you know, help advance those solutions in different ways. And philanthropy has a lot of flexibility in this. I mean, we have the ability to backfill in government programs or to innovate in different ways. And so really lean into that, lean into the fact that we don't have to do the same as everyone else. We can actually, we can, if that's what's being asked of us, that's great. But we can also, you know, really be creative in how we give.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patty. This has been time well spent. There are so many things to walk away from our time together today, both from recognizing the differences in others' needs and both short-term and long-term needs. So I appreciate all of your insight. I hope that those who are following along today will find these tips for your organization when you're preparing for disaster philanthropy. Thanks to our listeners and for joining us today on this Engage podcast. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for all Blackbaud does to help giving.
Thank you.